Donald. Hands up. No, I'm not under six. Okay, we've only got one. Who here is under 8 years old? Oh, we've got a few more. Okay. Okay. This next question is for the under eights. If we advance the slide. Oh, no, that's not the slide I want. That's the slide I want. Thanks, Ollie. Who's this guy? Under eights only. Anybody? It's your standard Sunday school answer. Don't be afraid. I'll put the mic on, actually. It'd be better, wouldn't it? I haven't got a... This statue is... if you go to the Natural History Museum, and there's a big Church of Jesus Christ and the Latter-day Saints. I won't go into how they're different to a Christian church, but they are different. And they've got this statue up there. And I looked at this statue last week and I thought, is that the Jesus I see when I think of Jesus? I mean, we know it's Jesus because we have that impression of Jesus. But look at his pecs. I was really jealous. He must work out, mustn't he, this guy? And he looks very white and he looks very clean. And he doesn't look like he ever got his hands dirty any time ever. And I don't know, that just doesn't sound like the Jesus that I've been thinking about preparing for this service. This is an all-age service. And I want to ask the question, how do we see Jesus? And I think growing up as a boy, I remember visions of the Catholic Jesus on a cross. Because it was everywhere in the church, and I thought it was a fairy tale. I didn't think that the person that they were... I thought it was just a religious icon. Maybe it was. But then as I got older, I realised that there was something different about some people who I was speaking to, about some friends who I was speaking to. And I'm sorry, I'm going all over the place. But that's just reminding me. You know, we're speaking about evangelism recently in the church. And I think evangelism really starts with friendship. And I was challenged this morning about, hey, how many friends, John, do you have that you're speaking to about Christ? And yeah, I come into contact with lots of people through CAP, and it's a great privilege and a great pleasure to do that. But somehow I think it has to be more than that. It has to be friendship in that mix. And that's why we have members of the visit team, and that's why we're asking for more members of the visit team, because it's such a crucial role. So that's just an aside. Back to how we see Jesus. I really first saw Jesus when I read the Bible. So I hope you don't mind. We're going to read a whole chapter of the Bible. Who's ever read a whole chapter of the Bible in one step before? Not you oldies, you don't care. You got nothing better to do. you can read, but young people, any young people ever read a whole chapter of the Bible? Chris, well done. And Chris is going to start off our reading of a whole chapter of the Bible. And it's about a blind man. And I think when you read the Bible, it's really important to try and imagine what's going on in that reading. Try and imagine the scene. Try and imagine the people. Try and see their faces. Try and put yourself in that scene. So, first of all, we're going to try and imagine what it's like to be blind. So, I'm going to ask everybody. Ellis has written a poem about being blind, about what it's like for this guy. And I want us, while Ellis is reading it, just to shut your eyes and keep them shut completely and try and imagine how many things you wouldn't have been able to do this morning if you were blind? How many things you've done this morning and you've done because you can see? I can think of one and you're all going to go, ugh, but it's cut my toenails. I'm going to cut my toenails. Sorry. I told you go, ugh. But it's the truth.
It's dark for me. As the new day's light opens the eyes of children, it's dark for me. I sleep as the moon replaces what came before. My body is sore and it's dark for me. For me, the world is in my head, images made by what I'm fed. I possess both touch and sound, the smell of earth, the feel of ground. Your voice is faceless. I don't know. There's nothing you can do to show. You are anonymous until you've left, or stay in silence, my mind's bereft. I was old on my day of birth. It will stay the same until my hearse. The youth mature, fear independence, the day when they can make amendments, see their lives for what they are, and live them out until they've passed. For me, alone is something else. Swimming blind requires help. There is nothing I can do without someone to give me clues, to tell me what is there in front and if the edge is sharp or blunt. I don't know if there is rain until I feel it hit my face. I can't judge the time by light. The moon can't show me to the night. I'm not present in the truth. Windows that I cannot use. Open space but with a roof. A door with bolts that won't come loose. Eyes are the window to the soul. Mine are empty, dark and cold. I've heard it said, sight is belief. I live in lies I can't perceive.
Did you all have your eyes shut? We're going to read a whole chapter of the Bible. We've got five people. Chris, you're up. Amelie, you're up. Who else have we got? Ellis, you're up again. And we'll pass the mic down. Natalie and Anna. Right, Ollie, let's... And I thought it'd be better if you heard younger people's voices. Ellis, you're in the middle, I think. We could get this right, get this story. Okay, so we've got it on the screen as well. Chris, you're up to verse 7, but I don't know where verse 7 is on here. You know where verse 7 is? Okay, good. Oh, here we go.
Walking down the street, Jesus saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, causing him to be born blind?" Jesus said, "You are asking the wrong question. You're looking for someone to blame. There is no such cause-effect here. Look instead for what God can do. We need to be energetically at work for the one who sent me here, working while the sun shines. When night falls, the workday is over. For as long as I am in the world, there is plenty of light. I am the world's light," he said. Then spit in the dust, made a clay paste with his saliva, rubbed the paste on the blind man's eyes, and said, "Go wash at the pool of Siloam." Siloam means sent. The man went and washed, and he saw.
Soon the town was buzzing. His relatives and those who year after year had seen him as a blind man begging were saying, "Why, isn't this the man we knew who sat here and begged?" Others said, "It's him all right," but others objected, "It's not the same man at all. It just looks like him." He said, "It's me, the very one." They said, "How did your eyes get opened?" "A man named Jesus made a paste and rubbed it on my eyes and told me to go to Siloam and wash. I did what he said. When I washed, I saw. So where is he? I don't know."
They marched the man to the Pharisees. The day when Jesus made the paste and healed his blindness was the Sabbath. The Pharisees grilled him again on how he had come to see. He said, "He put a clay paste on my eyes and I washed, and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "Obviously this man can't be from God. He doesn't keep the Sabbath." Others countered, "How can a bad man do miraculous, God-revealing things like this?" There was a split in their ranks. They came back at the blind man. "You're the expert. He opened your eyes. What do you say about him?" He said, "He is a prophet." The Jews didn't believe it. didn't believe the man was blind to begin with. So they called the parents of the man, now bright-eyed with sight. They asked him, "Is this your son, the one you say was born blind? So how is it that he now sees?" His parents said, "We know he is our son, and we know he was born blind, but we don't know how he came to see, haven't a clue about who opened his eyes. Why don't you ask him? He's a grown man and can speak for himself." His parents were talking like this because they were intimidated by the Jewish leaders, who had already decided that anyone who took a stand that this was the Messiah would be kicked out of the meeting place. That's why his parents said, "Ask him, he's a grown man."
They called the man back a second time, the man who had been blind, and told him, "Give credit to God. We know this man is an impostor." He replied, "I know nothing about that one way or another, but I know one thing for sure. I was blind, I now see." They said, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? I've told you over and over, and you haven't listened. Why do you want to hear it again? Are you so eager to become his disciples?" With that, they jumped all over him. "You might be a disciple of that man, but we're disciples of Moses. We know for sure that God spoke to Moses, but we have no idea where this man even comes from." The man replied, "This is amazing. You claim to know nothing about him, but the fact is he opened my eyes. It's well known that God isn't at the beck and call of sinners, but listens carefully to anyone who lives in reverence and does his will. That someone opened the eyes of a man born blind has never been heard of, ever. If this man didn't come from God, he wouldn't be able to do anything." They said, "You're nothing but dirt. How dare you take that tone with us?" Then they threw him out in the street.
Jesus heard that they had thrown him out and went and found him. He asked him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" The man said, "Point him out to me, sir, so that I can believe in him." Jesus said, "You're looking right at him. Don't you recognize my voice? Master, I believe," the man said, and worshipped him. Jesus then said, "I came into the world to bring everything into the clear light of day, making all the distinctions clear, so that those who have never seen will see, and those who will have made a great pretense of seeing will be exposed as blind." Some Pharisees overheard him and said, "Does that mean you're calling us blind?" Jesus said, "If you were really blind, you would be blameless. But since you claim to see everything so well, you're accountable for every fault and failure."
So we've got the gist of the story. Here was a guy, he was poor, he was disheveled, he was disabled. He had no economic standing. He was generally rejected. He wouldn't be allowed to go to the temple and worship for being defective. He had no way of gaining any employment. He had no state benefits he could turn to. His only chance was to beg on the street. And he couldn't see Jesus. And, you know, that's kind of number one point of my message this morning. Sometimes in suffering, especially in suffering, it feels like we just can't see Jesus. Where's Jesus in this? And the disciples asked that same question. They said, you know, this is down to sin. This is someone's fault. But whose was it? Can't have been his fault. He was born like that. Surely he didn't do something really wrong. There's a lot of suffering that does come through sin, through stupidity, through idiocy, through addiction, through all those kind of things. But this is a disability, this is something that happened from birth. Whose fault? Parents? Did they do something wrong? And Jesus turns that situation around. He says, "You're asking the wrong question. This is not a blame game here. I see potential. I see God at work in his life. And I'll show you something." What happened next was amazing. And he got down dirty with this guy. Can you imagine how much... Don't do it, but just get some saliva in your mouth. Think about how much saliva you would need to spit in the ground and make a paste if you had sort of like a dusty, muddy ground here. Just think. That takes some effort, doesn't it? There was some effort here. And can you imagine? You know, the disciples looking, what's he doing? making a paste, and then rubbing it. Look, if I went up to, like, yeah, exactly. You're like, going, but this guy was blind. He couldn't see what was happening anyway. But can you imagine how that felt? Someone's rubbing a saliva mud paste in my eyes. That's pretty intimate. And the fantastic thing is, you know, I think Jesus wants to be intimate with us. Jesus can be intimate with us. So although this guy couldn't see Jesus, Jesus saw him in his suffering and did something about it. Amazing miracle. The guy sees. When there's good news, you just have to tell people. You just have to tape it. And soon the town was buzzing. And this news was so good that they thought, no, it's not the same bloke. It's his twin brother. His twin brother who lived in Galilee has come to stay, and it's him. And he had to say himself, oh, actually, I am that guy. I am the guy who was the blind beggar. It's not a joke. It's not a story. It's not made up. Something happened to me. Now, I've got three very, very brave people who have agreed, thank you very much, to come up and each say something. If we get the slides on. What I wanted, because Jesus said, while it's day, we need to be working energetically. And sometimes I ask the question, you know, can you come up and say how Jesus has affected your life, how Jesus has impacted your life? And they've all agreed. But in some ways, I think that's the wrong question, just like the disciples asked the wrong question. We should be asking ourselves, how's Jesus going to change my life? What potential does Jesus see in me? What can happen that's going to change my life? So, Chris, your birth year is? 2003, okay. So if you can imagine 2003 and a dash, we don't know what that date is at the end, do we? That's why it's so important that we energetically work while we have Jesus in our lives. Come on, Chris, come on. Don't mind if we do this question and answer a little bit. Then it doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be painful, I don't think. But but this gets us an idea of the story. This poor blind guy was shoved in front of the Pharisees. This was like a trial. This wasn't a nice, friendly group of people in a church. This was a bunch of religious people who really didn't want to know. So here we go. Here we go, Chris. But they're not. They're nice. How has Jesus impacted your life?
I've obviously come to this church my whole life, and I guess before I truly came to know Jesus, church had come more of a routine. I'd been coming to it very every week, and it had become very boring, I would say, sometimes.
You could say that.
And I'd lost the feeling of actually getting to know Jesus and all. And it's just, when I came to know him, it made so much more sense to me. The chance I have to talk to him, the chance I have to speak with him, understand what he says, and all the possibilities he allows me to do. He helps me see what's the right thing to do. He helps me know what to do, helps me to think what to do. And he opens up such a potential in my life, which I obviously don't know where it's going to lead.
Oh, thanks, Chris. Thank you very much. Ellis, up next. Sorry? I just want to tell your story. Here's your story.
Well, about a month and a half or so ago, my friend and I, we went on like a dog walk in Soham on the snow day that we had off school. As you may have guessed, it was snowing and my hands were really cold, and I like took them out of my pockets to put my gubs on, and without realising, my bank card fell out of my pocket. I haven't told you this, Mum. about 3 minutes onwards in this walk, I realised that I'd lost it. And then I turned around and I was faced with the slightly impossible task of finding this tiny green card in like 200 square feet of snow with like grass underneath that was also green. So I said a quick prayer, "Dear God, please let me find my bank card." And about 100 metres away, I found my card wedged in between a twig and the ground, and it was like being prevented from being blown away in the wind. So I found it. It's all good. About 4 weeks ago, I had my first practical drama exam of my A-level course. We've been working on this piece on drug addiction for ages, and it was something that we created as a class. So there have been loads of like tensions within the group, unproductive rehearsals, and it was all together in a pretty bad state, and it was like a week until the exam. Me being me, I got pretty stressed several times in that week, and every time I did, I prayed. I prayed for the group, for the performance, and that I would find something in this character to help me relate to her and like access this alien personality of a drug addict. The piece went smoothly, looked polished, and received great feedback. The group pulled together and worked as a team, and I received full marks for my performance. We had yet another performance exam for a different course on the last Thursday before Easter. Again, we had created this piece entirely ourselves without any leadership from any teachers, and naturally this has caused tension as well as a lack of work. I have been praying a lot. Until the morning of the exam, I really didn't like our piece. I didn't feel confident with what I was doing. I thought it lacked integrity, interest, and professionalism. We then had an intense hour working with our teacher on the day of the performance. Things changed, and by the end of it, the time we performed, I loved our piece. The exam went well, and we reduced several audience members to tears, but like in a good way. That was the intention. So although these are three, like, in the grand scheme of things, kind of minor incidences, they are instances that I had no question I would need God's help in, and no question that if I asked, he would deliver that help. The point I wanted to make was that having been brought up a Christian, although there is always the moment when you decide for yourself that you want to give your life to God, there was never, like, one changing, life-changing incident that has split my life in half. So for me, it's not that God has impacted this part of my life or that part of my life or this particular moment or this period of time or when I go to church or read the Bible. It's not what I see God in my life. It's what I can't see him without. And that's nothing. Thanks.
Thanks, Alice. Now, Natalie. Oh, sorry, Ellis's birth year, it's 2001. I hope we get that wrong. Natalie, there you go.
So Jesus has definitely given me confidence in myself, like especially recently I've noticed, because through knowing him and growing in my faith while on like mission trips to Greece and Germany and like worshipping in different places where I can feel Jesus's presence, like in Luton and in my room and things like Soul Survivor and Spring Harvest and at church as well, they have allowed me to know who I am more in him. I've noticed that Jesus has put me in situations where I've definitely needed to and still do need to trust him. For example, with conversations with people at school about faith and other things, some have been difficult and some a bit easier, but I definitely need to trust that Jesus will speak through me and continue to work in my friendships with people. And he has taken me into new places where I can serve him more, which has been really good. And so without Jesus, I don't think I would be the person I am today. And so I'm very grateful. So thank you.
Can I say, tell your story. Don't be afraid of your story. It's your story. Everybody here has incredible potential for Jesus. It doesn't matter where you've started from. That blind man started from nowhere. And even after he had the miracle of sight, he still couldn't see Jesus. He didn't know who he was. He just knew that something had changed. Allow Jesus to be intimate. Allow Jesus to get deep down and dirty in your life. He sees you. He sees everything. There's nothing you can hide from him. But there was one other thing that this guy had to do. Paste in the eyes, nothing happened. Can you feel the disappointment? I think when I been up for prayer for different things. I'm kind of expecting this snap miracle right now, change it. And sometimes we go to God with that kind of snap. I want it now. This is the way I want it to be done. Jesus said, go and wash in the pool of Siloam. And it was a pool in Jerusalem. And I don't know how far away it was. It might have been miles away. It might have been two blocks away. I've got no idea. But he still had to do that. And that would have been difficult for him. He would have had to have had help to have got there. Someone else would have been involved in that part of the story. Someone else had to come alongside him for that. But he had to decide to do it. He had to be obedient. Can you imagine if it had the pace and said, no, I don't fancy it, sorry. Too much to do here. This is a good day for me. I've got £2 in my hat. I don't want to leave where I am now. I don't want to move. And sometimes I think, you know, we're all for Jesus to be intimate with us. And we want certain things to happen. And then if Jesus asks us to do something, even if it's something simple, something that we don't understand, well, I don't understand why you want me to do that. Why should I do that? Why should I be obedient? But that was the other side of the coin for this guy. He had to go and do something because he was told. And it's always a problem for all of us. You know, I love getting... knowing that Jesus is in my life, and I love that. But sometimes when Jesus asks me to do the simplest things, like, no, I don't fancy it. So that's another thing to bring out of the story. So the last point, and it's 5:30, so this is about the last point, and I think we can have the last song as well. You have a story, don't be afraid to tell it. Your potential is not limited by your circumstances. How do you react to Jesus? Are you energetically at work while it is day? And if you want some homework, read about the parable of the talents, Luke 19:11-27. That's a really important passage. Luke 19:11-27. Parable of the talents. Many of you will know it. If you don't, work it out. Jesus said, look, I've given you loads of gifts. I've given you gifts that are yours. You've got to use them. You've got to trust God with them. And the last part of this passage where Jesus said to the people who thought they knew him, actually, you don't see anything. You're almost willfully blind. They didn't want Jesus to be king. And that comes out in the parable of the talents too, in that passage in Luke. But most of all, and I'm going to try and find this other reference because it was important. Here it is. I'm going to read this. For people who are suffering and can't see Jesus in that suffering at all, 2 Corinthians 1:4. Have a look at that verse. It says this. He comes alongside us when we go through hard times. Excuse me. And before you know it, he brings us alongside someone else who is going through hard times. So that we can be there for that person. Just as God is there for us. God feels that suffering so fully. He sees that suffering so fully. None of the suffering that we experience is wasted. God gives us that suffering almost as a gift, so that as he comes alongside us and shares that suffering with us and heals that suffering, he puts someone else in our way that we can say, we have a story. That suffering becomes a story. It says, hey, I know how you feel. Chris, you got bored at church. I know how you feel. That's your story. But you went through that and you found Jesus through that. Lots of us struggle with lots of stuff. Don't reject it as something that God doesn't see, doesn't know about, doesn't care about. Jesus comes alongside us in that suffering and wants us to know he's there, wants us to know his touch, wants us to obey. We're going to sing a song now just as we leave. It says, it's really a commitment song. It's be king in my life, be king of all I am. And I just wonder, you know, if you're struggling to see Jesus, but you want to see him and you want to commit in your heart, sing this song as a commitment. Be king of all I am. And grab someone afterwards and pray with them. There's a little prayer thing. Hopefully we'll get a bit of quiet. You know, just grab someone and say, I'd like to pray. And pray with them over there. That'd be fantastic.